Psycho-Spiritual Alchemy, Dennis William Hauck, PhD, FRC.
In today's lecture, I wanted to look at the role of consciousness in alchemical transformations. I'm not talking about the kind of mental alchemy that focuses on integrating the ego, but rather on the vertical axis of transformation of essence and soul. This was the kind of alchemy developed by John Dee, Paracelsus, and Gerhard Dorn, and other Renaissance philosophers who believed consciousness was a force in nature. We'll develop a model of alchemical consciousness based on their teachings, but updated with modern findings from the emerging field of consciousness studies. This model could prove useful in understanding or connecting with the source, our source, in the unus mundus, the primal one world or one mind that existed before physical existence. So let's get started here. The oldest form or format for existence really can be found in the Pythagorean teachers with Pythagoras. He developed the Tetractys, which is a scheme of 10 numbers. These are originally numbers. I've added the alchemical symbols appropriate for each one. But in his scheme, the monad was at the top, number one, where I have the moon or the lunar forces was number two, where I have the sun or solar forces was number three. So this level of the sun and moon, the king and queen in alchemy, is the level of duality, the duality of our existence, where the opposites kind of complement and also produce each other in a way that everything adds up to zero. It's a way of existing or coming into existence in the universe and not being there. It's a way of being and existing that originated in oneness, originated in wholeness. At the next level, the level of the triad, we see the alchemical symbols for salt, mercury, and sulfur. So that's the level of the triad, which is the triadic forces of creation. We see this same thing in modern physics, matter, energy, and salt, matter, energy, and light, which are related in the Einsteinian equation of E equals mc squared. But in the alchemical teachings, light was the source of both energy and matter. Light was projected from the monad, from the one mind, into reality to create it, called the logos or the word. And that function is part of the Pythagorean teachings too. And the fourth level is the elements of creation or manifestation, the symbol for earth and water, fire and air, represent the quaternity of existence, the physical manifestation of cubic space. This whole scheme was summarized perfectly by a female alchemist known as Maria Prophetisia. Her cry, Maria's cry, became a famous dictum in alchemy. You'll see it in many, many of the treatises of the alchemist, and who recognized it's important. And what it's referring to is exactly what you see on your screen. It's the Pythagorean cosmology of the monad creating the world, the one mind creating the world. Sometimes in alchemical drawings, you'll see her just pointing at something with her mouth open. And the alchemist knew what that meant. It meant that one becomes two, two becomes three, and out of the third comes the one as the fourth, this scheme of creation. We see the same idea in many different cultures. In the Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, we see the exact same sentence pretty much written in beautiful detail about the unfolding of the Tao into creation. We see it expressed in the Tetragrammaton of the Word of God in the Hebrew teachings, where the God, and these Hebrew letters spell Yahweh, or the Jewish God, but it presents them in a triadic form of three forces acting in reality in the scheme of the Pythagorean tetractys. We also see on the right there the alchemical scheme, which is based on this same scheme, Pythagorean scheme, of something coming from one. This is a physical description of reality based on Pythagorean teachings. We have the prima materia at the top where the monad would be, the symbol there of yin-yang with the seed of each is also a symbol of the monad in the Eastern religions. And we have that divided into the physical duality of the fixed and the volatile, the nitre and the salt that make up physical reality, and divided then into the essential substances in physical thinking in alchemy of salt, mercury, and sulfur. And then finally, the four elements, water, earth, and air and fire. The next scheme that was developed to understand reality was Hermetic cosmology, which really dominated for almost 1,000 years the thinking of mankind about where they stood in the universe. And consciousness is also part of this model. It was developed in Egypt and based on the Ptolemaic system of where they thought that the earth was at the center of the universe. So we see there in the very center. And one thing to note is any scheme that is circular like this with a point in the center is a representation of the monad. That's the symbol for the monad, is the symbol of a circle with a dot at its center. That's also the symbol for the sun, also the symbol for gold. So it's a very important symbol in alchemy, and we'll get more into that later in the lecture. But this idea that there's spheres of reality around the around the earth, and that it begins outside our universe in the Empyrean, where the one mind or monad exists outside the universe. This is a better drawing, actually, of the Hermetic scheme by Robert Flood, 1617. We see these fiery realms here that are part of the heavenly or spiritual forces that surround the earth, which is done in some detail here by Flood. We have the monad still projecting down. Let's go in there a little bit. Projecting down into reality, but here the name of God's on it. But it's connected by a chain to the human figure, meaning that we share that consciousness of the monad or one mind, and that it further follows down into the animal kingdom through the life force that's coming down from above. So Flood's got a lot of elements and details in this drawing, but basically we're interested in the right now the Epirium, the realm where the monad filters down into our reality. These are all fiery realms, meaning they exist in spirit. And what you see, these little figures are all archetypes, or part of the logos, part of the Word of God, that are determining our reality. And the next development is we go down into the 10th heaven, which is the first cause. And that's that second ring down into reality, but that's not outside reality. That's becoming part of reality. That's a projection from the one mind or the monad into mind the maker or the mind of nature. And that filters down into the ninth heaven, which is in their philosophy is called the prime mover, or the first mover. And that ring is next to the ring of stars, which is this ring. And that is called the prime mover because it sets everything in motion here. It sets the whole created universe in motion. So that's the first source of motion. We look at these a little closer. The 10th heaven or the first cause issues directly from the monad and creates this mind, the maker, which is the ultimate cause of all events. That it's a cause that does not have a cause of its own. It's projected from the unity of the one mind. And the ninth heaven, the first mover, it's a spiraling emanation of solidified light, which is very similar to the idea of the Big Bang, the monad coming into reality in the Big Bang, the singularity of existence, and the solidification of light at the very beginning, the first few 100,000 years of the Big Bang, light was actually a solidified, a solid, a substance. And that projected into our reality as a source of rotation and action in the universe that brought matter and energy together. The eighth heaven is the firmament of the stars, which is shown here. That's the influences of the houses, the constellations. And it's against the background of the fixed stars where the wandering planetary spirits also manifest. And each of these planets regulates a specific archetypal consciousness. So what we're talking about in alchemy, now there's probably millions of archetypes in the mind of the universe. The alchemists focused on these seven archetypes, which contain, they believe, the closest manifestation of our reality. Other archetypes, other realities, and that's true all the way down to the personal level. But in alchemy, seven planets stand for the basic archetypes that come from the mind of God. And they take place on a planetary ladder of transformation. And that's shown in these areas here, the seven levels surrounding the earth that filter down their energies. And we see here the different planets manifested with their names. And well, we pretty much all know the planetary ladder, I think, because of alchemy. It's so such a fundamental part of alchemy. If you studied it, these archetypes come up time and time again. The heaven of Saturn is a archetype of contraction. It's a dualism. We're tied to time and space. It's condensation of soul at the beginning of creation. Low awareness. Yet it is in the planetary ladder, the return gateway to the stars, to the eighth heaven of the firmament. So the planetary ladder is a journey from the contraction to initial contraction of birth of soul in our galaxy, in our existence, and the journey back from the sun and the earth to return to the stars, which is our rightful home. And beyond the stars is where this is headed, beyond the stars into the unitary consciousness of the monad, which we'll talk about in more detail a little later here. The next planet, Jupiter, the heaven of Jupiter, is just the opposite from a contraction. It's expansion. So it's a principle of spirit and energy. It forces the Saturn archetype to transform and grow. Exaltation of life force and the Jupiterian personality, or where the archetype is really expressed, tends to be in the courtly type of person, who's very sociable, but not a person of substance. There's some superiority in the in the personality as it tries to hold that its transcendental origin while existing in a body. So that's how these archetypes express in different ways. In psychology, these archetypes are described in pretty much the same way that the alchemist described them. The heaven of Mars, of course, is aggression, aggressive ego, discipline, laws, and rigor. But it also has a very important alchemical attributes of purification, the vulcanizing idea of forging changes. So it checks the expansive signatures of Jupiter and tends to make them more focused or more real in the world. The heaven of the sun is stability and growth. It's the nurturing, stable environment for growth, but it also has within it the idea of the monad, the idea of non-duality. Just being in the sun sometimes gives us that feeling that of comfort, like we're home. No place is this better described than in Akhenaten's Hymn to the Aten, where he describes this the monad as an abstract form of the sun, the Aten, the solar disk. Not only was it the monotheistic idea that there's only one God, but it was the monistic idea that it was the source of everything and that it existed outside our universe and the source of non-duality. But we get that same feeling from the sun we see every day that shines its light and brings light into our world. The sun at this position, just like all the archetypes relate to each other, is a balancing force between the masculine spheres above it and the feminine spheres below it. So the sun here in this Ptolemaic format is at the center of things. It's the turning point in the transformations. That Ptolemaic system is used in many initiatory orders and fraternal organizations. It's the ancient way of initiation that focuses more on the personality and the individual things that have to be overcome in the ego. The heaven of Venus, of course, beauty and love, emotions, sensation, sexual desire. It tempers Mercury's discipline with a desire to just relax and let go. It grounds the sun's energy and also Mercury's intellectual pursuits. The heaven of Mercury, which is mind of imagination, is this next sphere or rung on the ladder of the planets. Mercury is thought, intellect, clarity, inspiration, imagination, all these mental forces that in the new thinking in quantum mechanics and consciousness studies is the reality, the background reality of the whole universe. Consciousness is beginning to be seen as a force of nature in modern science too. Mercury presents a constraint to emotional decision-making and balances the Venusian structures that are manifested. But the key thing about Mercury in alchemy and in the personal work on the ladder of the planets is that it offers an escape through imagination and a return to the monad in many ways. We'll see that in our model coming up here, but Mercury is extremely important and not only in alchemy and physical alchemy, laboratory alchemy, but in personal alchemy too. This is where the change, the seed of change is placed. Imagining an outcome, imagining what we want, connecting with the true imagination of the monad above us. This is a very important part of alchemy. And it does balance the feminine aspects of the moon with the romantic impulses of Venus. But again, that's a function of all these archetypes, planetary archetypes, that relate to the planets closest to them in important ways. And that applies also in psychological work on the ladder of transformation and alchemical transformation too. So the heaven and the moon is the closest to the planet Earth. It's a subconscious mind, a feminine archetype, but it causes reflection and balance and focuses attention on physical forms, cycles of growth and decay. It filters the reflected light from higher celestial spheres. So the light of the moon does not originate within itself, but it reflects it and changes it and purifies it in some ways so that it becomes physical. It's the balancing force between the powers above and below, and unites the subconscious with the conscious minds. We see this tradition of the Hermetic cosmology in the heavenly spheres and the trees of life, and I'm not going to go into too much detail here. I just want you to be aware that the tree of life is a direct copy of the Hermetic cosmology that's part of the Rosicrucian culture and other organizations like that. All these traditions are very much related on the deeper level. In the tree of life, the Imperium is the Asmus, which is outside of the universe, just like the monad. And the word of God or the Logos comes down through the Ein Sof, from the Ein Sof, in a lightning bolt that zigzags between the pillars of the tree of life. And it touches each of these spheres, which I've listed here. So the model of alchemical consciousness that we're working on basically follows the Pythagorean scheme of the monad, the dyad, and the triad, and the tetrad, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the power of the sum of the tetractus, which is 10, perfect number. So the monad is the one mind in alchemy. The dyad is the duality of existence, the necessary balancing out of opposites so that everything adds up to zero. And the triad, the three forces of creation, which are present in any living thing, anything with spirit, to harness these forces as they are harnessed by the universe in the Big Bang, is the goal of personal alchemy. For these forces are what's going to fuel the transformation, if it's going to be a lasting transformation. And of course, the four elements of manifestation and physical existence. So let's take a look at this chart, which is developed from both the Pythagorean teachings and Hermetic teachings and the Kabbalah, and mostly secret traditions, with the addition of some quantum ideas and also consciousness studies that that we've learned in the last century. Let's look at the level of the one mind. This is the monad. Again, this is the symbol for the monad, circle with a dot at the center. This dot is a massless, pointless entity. It has no dimensions, but in that sense, it's outside our universe. This is true in mathematics, geometry, and spiritual work with the monad. The circle around the dot is the limits or the boundaries or the sacred space created in the monad or one mind. So the monad produces or splits from itself or reflects on itself in such a way that it creates the dyad of existence, which is the rise of the opposites. And it does that through the projection of light, the singularity of the universe, or this singularity of our own personalities. We produce changes. We recognize opposites through the light of consciousness. So this is the Logos, and it splits into opposites. Just showing the first opposites here of energy and matter, of the Big Bang, of existence. And yet, though they're opposite, they unite and cancel each other out. They return to the monad, which is the monad, remember, is a wholeness beyond duality. There's no possibility of opposites there, but it projects the light into the dyad of duality, which is mind the maker or the mind of nature. It's the embedded mathematics that we're discovering in nature, which is we're finding now that that is not outside us in matter, but it's inside us, in our minds, in our consciousness. There are archetypes of our own consciousness of reality that we project into the world. Science is turning more and more to the idea that consciousness is all there is, and that that matter is an interpretation of consciousness. We see this throughout science in the negation of opposites, or the effect of the observer in interacting with physical existence, that it changes. And sometimes, for instance, recently they've discovered in the entanglement of particles, where two particles, subatomic particles, are created at the same time, they maintain sometimes a connection, so that when one particle does one thing or changes its momentum or inertia in certain ways, its speed or velocity, the other particle reacts in exactly the same way, even though they're separated by vast distances. And that connection, strangely, if we try to observe one of those particles, the whole thing disappears. The whole entanglement disappears, and reality resets itself to just two separate particles behaving differently. So it's another confirmation of the idea that consciousness affects reality in strange ways. We don't understand it yet, of course, but it's something that is being recognized more and more, that was recognized early on by the alchemist and filtered into the Hermetic teachings and the organizations. It's a realization that many of the organizations have had, that consciousness is all there is. The mental realm is the realm superior to physical existence. So at the level of the triad, the Mercury appears as a reflection of the monad. In other words, Mercury is unique in that it is part of mind, and it has its own monad. We can see that in this symbol around Mercury. So the idea here was really perfectly described in Gottfried Leibniz's monadology. He wrote a whole science about monads and how they react in the world. But the idea here is that there is a lesser monad, a personal monad, that we are all atoms of consciousness in the world. And that everything is atoms of consciousness. And what varies is the level of consciousness, from dead matter all the way up to the monad. But Mercury, again, the key, because it's a reflection, or it's a hologram, or in the Hindu teachings, it's the net of Indra. The idea that all these gemstones that make up the net of the universe are reflecting each other. And so that is the atom of consciousness, or the personal monad, if you will. It's our own personal world. And that's a fact we really can't deny, that we each live in our own personal world, in our own personal monad, where we create a reality. And the possibility of relating between monads was a big discussion in philosophy for many years. Leibniz said that monads don't have windows, that we can't really relate to each other. And there have been more theories that monads do have windows, but that's all philosophizing. And what we really feel in our lives is what we should be focused on. science and philosophy are going to go on forever arguing about what these academic points. But the reality is that we can experience it, that we can feel it. And how you feel about your personal monad, and just looking at yourself in terms of being a reflection of the monad, the one world within yourself, and how you react to outside influences, and how the pure awareness that you are born with into this world, that pure monad that you carry with you is disrupted and corrupted by outside influences and outside energies. And how pure that monad is, how pure your awareness is, how pure that is, how pure your being will be, your very existence in the world. And that is what survives the world. That point at the center of the monad is eternal. And it's eternal in us, in this philosophy. It's eternal in the monad, the ultimate monad, the creator monad. So we exist as monads, atoms of consciousness. And from that, from Mercury, from light, we can recognize the opposites in matter. Here shown as sulfur and salt, but sulfur being energy and salt matter. But it also stands for all the other opposites that we can sense in the world. And the tetrad, still filtering down through the elements and through the Pythagorean Tetractus, gives us the four elements of creation: fire, air, water, and earth. And these elements are metaphysical elements, but they're part of the creation that makes the cubic space, makes mechanical existence possible. And we're even discovering now on the atomic level that there seem to be four forces that bring together atoms and molecules to make matter. So the alchemical idea here is four elements, and it stands for creation and the different aspects of creation. And again, at the bottom here, at the which is the result of the of this projection of consciousness into the universe, is the stone. This could be the philosopher's stone, which is a becomes a permanent state of wisdom and awareness, purified awareness. But in most of us, it's just a stone that kind of stumbles along in the world. But that's where we create our transformations, by purifying the stone, or by making the stone, which is us in physical reality, by making that a reflection of the monad, the personal monad and the greater monad, the perfection of that. By uniting opposites within us, that is how we achieve monadic consciousness, or pure awareness, eternal being that does not become corrupted. So the idea here is that these archetypes come together in the stone, and through alchemy, if we're wise at this stage, if we're even aware that transformation is possible, that's where the work is at. That's where the great work occurs on this level. We see that the chemical ciphers here representing the planetary archetypes and the archetypes of basic existence. We have the sun representing energy coming down into the stone, filtering down into our reality. And the aggressive archetype of Mars being part of it, the expansive archetype of Jupiter filtering down, and the feminine archetype of Venus, the contractive worldly archetype of Saturn, and the lunar archetype of the moon. So we have in these opposites, we have interesting things, the solar consciousness versus the lunar consciousness, subconscious versus enlightenment and bright consciousness. It's the king and queen in alchemy coming together in union. And this is where the union takes place. This is where the union of opposites take place, which in all of alchemy is the goal. Once we bring these planetary forces together into fruition within us, into reality within us, they give birth to a return to unity within our personal monad, our personal consciousness too. So the natural state of the universe is the monad. The natural state of reality is the monad, which is one world, one idea, no conflicts. And let's go a little bit deeper into that idea. So this is the symbol of the monad. It's been the symbol of the monad since before alchemy, before we considered it to be a symbol of gold. It was a symbol of the one mind of the universe in Pythagorean teachings. And there's something just perfect about that symbol, about trying to grasp what the monad would be like, what a world beyond duality is like. And we see the same pattern throughout alchemy. Whenever you see it, it means that it's referencing the monad or the unified state of consciousness. We see that in the Dante's Divine Comedy, when he reaches beyond the Imperium. This is what he and Beatrice, his spirit guide, see. It's basically a depiction of the monad or the unifying light of consciousness. We see it in alchemical drawings all the time. This is the monad again, the alchemist and at the center with the monad circle around it. And that is the goal of the great work. That is the goal of this diagram, really, this practical meditation, is to achieve a unified mind, to get beyond the constant onslaught of thoughts and opposing thoughts and going kind of trapped in this binary prison of existence, but it's also in our minds. To achieve that unitary state is not only the release, but it's a building of an eternal presence within us. So there's freedom there in our lives from the torture of our thoughts. There's freedom to become something different, to participate differently. And there are many ways of achieving this. And that was the goal of the great work, to find them and to work with them. In many different religions, that is the goal, to achieve the unity of mind and get beyond the duality of existence. Again, another monad reference drawing would be this Daniel Miley's drawing of the alchemical laboratory. It's the monad again in this doorway to the external reality, or the achievement of the great work is at the center. So any drawing like that we see is an expression of monadic energies or the principle of the monad at work. In this drawing, Tabula Smaragdina, which is the Emerald Tablet drawing, we see the Unus Mundus above, the one world above, and down below is the world of duality. We're split into opposing existence, opposing modes of existence. And we're chained to the clouds of unknowing because we're not, we're still caught in that binary doubt. But the key thing here in this drawing, I think, is that there's two suns here. So this sun in the background is the monad. It would be formed by this dot, which is Mercury at the center here. And this sometimes called the dark sun, the black sun, the hidden sun. It's a depiction of the monad. And what it projects through this beam of light or lightning bolt or logos or whatever you want to, however you want to picture that projection of information into reality, that creates this second sun, which is the logos or the first cause in Hermetic teachings, or the dyad in Pythagorean teachings, the source of duality, but also the carrier of, so if we look to it, John Dee's monad, we see the monad symbol here, and it's made up of the seven planetary signatures. Here we have Mercury, which makes up the main body of the hieroglyphic monad of D, and the symbol for Venus, or the feminine force, part of this. You can see it here. And the masculine force of Mars, we can see it here. And D thought by combining all these symbols, we'd achieve one symbolic magical symbol that would transform us. We see here the symbols for Jupiter reflected in a horizontal reality here. So that this would be the symbol for Jupiter at a, laying on its side here. And this would be its reflection. And the symbol for Saturn, similarly here reflected in a left and right duality version, Saturn here, and the reflection of Saturn here. So it's a powerful symbol, a way of working with the monad, actually, that gives us a system that we can see all at once without having the planets being separate forces. So it's a great meditation symbol. It's a great symbol to construct in a geometric meditation, to go through John Dee's treatise and actually work through the geometry of it, which begins with the point and the monad. And again, we're talking about the monad showing up in alchemical drawings as an archetypal symbol, dotted to center with the circle, and dotted to center with the circle, and the tabulus margina drawing showing the monad as a sun behind the sun, the black sun or the hidden sun, with mind the maker projecting into our physical reality and duality below. Key here is that the center of the projection into reality, the logos, is the idea of mind or consciousness. That symbol here, if you can see it, is a symbol for Mercury, which is intellect, imagination, and mind. In John Dee's monad, where he tried to expand on the monad with the ladder of the planets and make a magical, powerful symbol that would incorporate all these powers into one symbol. Rembrandt's drawing of the alchemist or philosopher is also another monadic symbol with the here at this this hanging basket is the center of this circle. So the philosopher in meditation is the title of this, is achieving a monadic state of mind in this drawing. And he's bathed in the light of consciousness. So consciousness is part of this process. The physical work is shown here by his Sora Mystica, his feminine part, doing the laboratory work and him creating the conscious connection. So it's mind and matter working together within an individual. So this is like perfect integration and also an awareness of the monadic powers. We have a basket hanging here. If this was a distillation process, this is where the condensate would collect in a sublimation. The darker powers are accessible here in the subconscious darkness of the alchemist. So everything's here, and there's really a powerful understanding of the alchemical process as well as the alchemical cosmology of the whole universe. This is the monad again, and it's something that you can sense if you meditate on the symbol. It's just the idea of the empty space and the point of focus or concentration at the center. Right now, among the thousand or so people attending this seminar, there is a sea of consciousness that we're not aware of. It's always there, but it's not part of our culture to acknowledge it or even talk about it. But that's the background of our reality, is consciousness. We're like a bunch of fish swimming in the ocean and not know what water is. We're just beginning to study this phenomenon of consciousness, but that really doesn't matter because it's always been there. We've always, on the personal level, been able to feel this field of consciousness or this field of awareness that is the basic ground of our being. And this idea of pure awareness is something we can search for and try to achieve. It's a state really beyond thoughts, and that's hard to imagine, because we're constantly thinking. Our head is full of thoughts. But when you get beyond thoughts, and whatever causes that, whether it be a coma, a deep meditation, a Dzogchen meditation, the Buddhists do, whatever ceases thoughts produces this monadic state. When thoughts stop, you simply realize there's something else there. You're free and clear to see that there is a ground of being there, a field of awareness beyond what you thought. And it's a very exhilarating feeling. And people in near-death experiences, people who take drugs or meditate on these type of meditations, which are very difficult to achieve, but there's even been more and more research into the magnetic state. I actually experienced this state for the first time, kind of by accident. I'm diabetic, and I accidentally took 100 units of short acting insulin instead of the long acting. And it was a dire situation. I called the emergency, and they told me to eat as much sugar as I could, which it was Halloween. That wasn't hard. We had like 4 or 5 bags of Tootsie Rolls. And so I laid in my bed. No one was home. And I started unwrapping Tootsie Rolls and shoving them in my mouth. And before long, I felt the weakness of low blood sugar, if you know what that's like. But there comes a point when it continues and it goes down below 40, where you lose the ability to think. The brain needs a lot of sugar to process thoughts. And there's no more thoughts in that state of a diabetic coma. So I passed out for a little less than 2 hours. And I had this feeling of the inability to have thoughts, to generate a single thought. And there was no fear because there were no thoughts. It was a focused awareness. There was a light. There was a warm light. There was a feeling of security. security of being home, the feeling that this is what's right, or this is what's true, or this is the normal state of pure awareness, just awareness, just being awareness. It's hard to describe, but eventually the Tootsie Roll started working and I got drugged back into reality. And it was an unpleasant experience because I got pulled back into this cold gray world where I wasn't bathed in this warm light. And then I started having thoughts. And the first thought I had was, what can I call this? Because I knew it was a numinous experience and I wanted to remember it. And the first thing that came to my mind was, I am that I am. The idea that, and it wasn't in the religious sense. It was more in just the fact that that's an eternal, normal existence. I am that I am. There's nothing more to say about it. Being an awareness is all there is. And when we fall into a duality, like I was doing when I was recuperating and having the ability to have thoughts, right away their opposites started showing up, and aches and pains and confusion and everything else that goes with reality. So this state is not only have I felt it, but I've also felt it in meditations and Drudgyan meditations that the Buddhists teach, and other meditations that require the loss of thought, the quieting meditations in the Middle Ages were used by alchemists a lot to achieve this state. But this is a real state of consciousness, and we can't deny it by saying that we don't feel it all the time. It's a return to the normal state, I believe. And the monad has shown up in all our philosophies, and we've called it by different names. Different religions call it by different names, but it is the existence of something greater than us that's always there, that's outside our universe. We can't describe it. In fact, people who have had this experience, again, deliberately or through accidents or disease or near-death experiences or deliberate meditations. Sometimes, I was recently at a conference in France, and they were talking about this monadic experience, and they related it to the la petite mort of sexual orgasm, that moment of orgasm when you can't have any more thoughts. It's just a taste of the death that releases this consciousness in us or returns it to us. You don't have to die to be there, but it's real information for us. The kinds of things that people experience when they have this kind of experience is this definitely state of new non-duality and oneness, wholeness, and it takes place on a boundless space. There's no dimensions. There's always a pure warm light of some type, a golden light, and it is always beyond thoughts or exhibits the inability to have thoughts. There's a sense of whole original self, soul, or a primal state of being beyond time. The basic idea of me and you or I and other is transcended because we can't reflect like that anymore. We're one. There's nothing other to us. And the pure centeredness, awareness, or this default presence that we are, that we were meant to be, and that is awareness, that is consciousness of the universe, appears. So there's no more ego striving or attachments naturally. There's a sense of eternity with no experience of time. And because of no experience of time, that's part of the idea that there's no fear. There's no thoughts, there's no ability to feel threatened. We feel at home in a state of total relaxation. There's a direct gnosis of reality that this is the knowledge. The knowledge seems complete, although there are no particulars of knowledge. There's no data, but for some reason, the knowledge feels complete. And it's infinite satisfaction, bliss, perfect serenity. You really don't want to leave that experience because, again, it's a feeling of an unexpected feeling that there's something more there, that there is a reality beyond us that is that is waiting, or is part, is not waiting, but it's part of reality. It's the fundamental part of reality, consciousness. The mercury within us reflects that. So we are part of that, and the personal monad. Okay, I see my time is up. I appreciate your attention. This is taken, a lot of this is taken from my book, Alchemy, Energize Your Life by Freeing Your Mind. It's about how to use mercury and apply mercury to changing awareness and transformation.